we had done the first two verses, where the first verse he says, Sri Bhagavan Uvach, the Lord says, I am now going to tell you the highest knowledge. It's not something new. What is being told in the Bhagavad Gita has been told before in the earlier chapters, hinted at, and also has been told exhaustively in the Upanishads and the various scriptures. But here the Lord is in depth going into the three gunas. He says this knowledge of the gunas is necessary for going to the higher knowledge. It's like the foundation on which your spiritual building is built. So whether great rishis or great mahatmas, everybody has to start from ABCD. Only then you can write literature. You have to learn 2 + 2 = 4 before you can go to quantum physics. So this knowledge of the gunas is the basis on which the entire spiritual knowledge is built. So I'm going to tell you that. And he says, one who understands that, then this person, sarge no pajayante, kalaya na vyathanti cha. Then he goes beyond death. He's neither born at the time of creation nor perishes at the time of death. He becomes immortal. Immortal does not mean that he lives forever 300, 400 years in the same body. That would be torture. What he means is he understands his true nature as Om, as the infinite self, and he knows that no matter what happens to my body, I am immortal. I am invincible, unchanging. So that is the benefit of this knowledge. So having now introduced why we should study, now the Lord today will talk about creation. So today's topic is creation. And what we'll do is we'll take verse numbers 3 and 4 together. Verse number 3. Mama yo nirmahad brahma. Tasmin garbham dadhamyaham. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Sarva yonishu kaunteya. Murtaya murtaya sambhavanti yaha. Tasam brahma mahad yonihi. Aham bija pradah pita. So mama, when Krishna says I, mama, mine, he only does not mean Krishna, the blue boy of Vrindavan or the son of Vasudev and Devaki, but I as the total consciousness. When Krishna identifies himself with the totality, the total consciousness, Om or Brahman, the substratum of the whole universe, the support of everything, then he uses the word I. So I is not an egocentric expression, but it is his identification with the total substratum of the universe called Brahman, or the total consciousness that illumines all plants, birds, animals, fish, humans, everything that is illumined by that one consciousness that is the support and substratum of the whole universe. So when he says I, he refers to that I, that is the totality. So he says mama yoni. So my womb, yoni means womb, my womb is Mahat Brahma. Mahat Brahma, the total causal body, the total. I'll explain this chart in a little more detail, because this chart is kind of has a lot of technical terminology that we should know to study Vedanta. So he says, Mama Yoni Mahat Brahma. So my womb is Mahat Brahma. Tasmin garbham dadhami aham. Tasmin, in that womb, garbham, the seed, dadhami aham. I place the seed in the womb, which is Mahat Brahma. Sambhavaha sarva bhutanam. And sarva bhutanam, all beings, not only humans, but birds, plants, animals, fish, all beings, their creation, sambhava sarva bhutanam, tato bhavati bharata. From that origin where I placed my seed in the total womb, from there emerge all beings, tato bhavati, from there happens all the creation happens, creation takes place of all beings from that initial union of the matter with the spirit. And then he says in the next verse, sarva yonishu kaunteya, and in all wombs, whether it's human wombs, animal wombs, bird wombs, plants, the seeds, everywhere, kaunteya, O Arjuna, murtayaha sambhavanti yaha. Murtayaha, all murtis means all the bodies, all the beings. Sambhavanti means they emerge, they are created, yaha, from there. Tasam, Brahma, of that Brahma, Mahat Brahma, Yoni, who is the Yoni, who is the womb, it is Mahat Brahma, and Aham Bija Pradav Pitaha, and I am the father who Bija Prada, who provides the seed. So here he talks about how creation happens. As we know, whether it's a human or an animal, or a bird, there is always a union of a male and a female, and the male puts his seed in the womb of the female, and then that union, from there emerges a child, whether it's a human, whether it's a cow or a dog, or even in a plant, you know, where they have this piston and, you know, their biology, a piston and staple or stamen, that when they, you know, the seed from one goes to the other, and that's how the new plant emerges. So the whole world is created from that, even whether it's in birds, whether it is in fish. So using that same simile, even though we know that in reality, it's not that there is a woo egg somewhere and then the seed is placed, but he's using that symbolism because it is easy for us all to understand, because we have seen that, we have experienced it in our daily life. So, there are some technical terms which I shall deal with as they come. But it is said that even science says that first the universe was unmanifest. And I was reading a few years back, they said that the entire universe was the size of a grapefruit. A small little fruit was the entire universe, whole thing, all the planets, everything, the stars, everything was compacted tremendously into that. And then there was a big bang, they said. There was a big bang and it broke. And it, within a trillionth of a second, it had become like trillion times big. The technology, the logistics is unimaginable. That from that one little small thing emerged this entire universe, and it spread so rapidly with the Big Bang that even now the universe is expanding. The stars are moving further away, the planets are moving. Not only the planets are moving around the stars, but the stars are also moving further and further away into space. Even the space is expanding, and they are even saying that not only there are space expanding, but this space that we know has a limit, and beyond that there are other universes which have their own space, which is it's amazing. And there are, maybe they don't know how many universes there might be. And this consciousness that we call Brahman extends even way, way beyond that. He says, only a part of me became this entire universe. Most of me is untouched. Tripad Urdhva Udayat Purusha Pado Esa Bhavatpana. In the Upurush Suktam Shri Krishna, it is said that only a part of that consciousness became all these universes, not only this visible universe, but all the heavens, all the hells, all the whatever we know, the 14 worlds, only occupies a very small part of that Lord, that Brahman, that total consciousness. So in using that same simile, what our Puranas say, that the world was unmanifest in the shape of an egg. It is very well described in our Upanishads and the Puranas. And the light of consciousness penetrated. So there must have been a very powerful light that penetrated in that egg and caused this trip. Because where did the energy for the Big Bang come? Science says there was a Big Bang. Okay, but where did the energy come from? This tremendous energy to push the stars and planets trillions of miles away and still is pushing them. That energy, where did it come from? The Lord says, I, as the light, there was a light which actually penetrated this little egg and caused this tremendous explosion. And that is how, so that is what he says, that the seed is not that there is a seed or there is a, but it is the light of energy which caused this tremendous explosion to happen. And there are a few terms that one should understand how creation happened. So on the left side is the total and on the right side is the individual. So the first is, as we have talked about, is Brahman. Brahman is the total consciousness and is represented in the individual by Om. And we'll cover that in the chart. The Mahat Brahma, or the womb of all the creation, is the total vastness, and in the inner individual becomes the individual vastness. Hiranyagarbha represents the total mind and intellect, which is in the individual, is called MNI. Virat is the total body and the individual body. And then we have a term called Ishvara and Jiva. Now, in this chart, this individual body, mind and intellect is me. Or I think myself to be this body, mind and intellect. And using the body, I become a perceiver of objects. Using the mind, I become a feeler of emotions. And using the intellect, I become a thinker of thoughts. So this is me, the body, mind and intellect. This is the universe, objects, emotions and thoughts. And the perceiver, feeler and thinker is also called as the ego, the limited individuality. And vasanas are my unmanifest tendencies which make me act. They could be good or they could be bad. You know, a robber will have, you know, thief-like vasanas. A saint will have divine vasanas. So the good and bad vasanas cause me to act. And Om represents the consciousness, the totality, which is illumining this individual body. And the perceiver, feeler and thinker is also called the Jiva or the individuality. So in that chart, Brahman represents the total consciousness, the totality, as I said, the total consciousness which illumines the entire universe, supports it. And Om is that same consciousness, but functioning through an individual. It's not a separate, it is actually one. Swami Chinmayananda, somebody asked him, what is the difference between the individual soul and the total consciousness or Brahman? So Swami Chinmayananda gives a very beautiful answer. He says, it is like, what is the difference between the total space and the room space? There is actually no difference. It is one space. Before this room was built, before 2006, there was an empty lot. And so the space was only one. And then we got together and made this building. So now this room has four walls. So now we say, oh, this is the dining room. And this is where we do our Gita class. So the total space has been as if artificially divided by these four walls. And so now we have the room space and we have the total space. Actually, it is one, but appears to be separate because of our identification that, oh, this is Chinmaya Mission and outside is the, you know, the other town of Bakersfield and other buildings and all. So, and suppose in the future, you know, when this building gets old and so we say, okay, now this building is no use to us, we need to expand and make a bigger building. So we break these walls, then what will happen? This space will merge with the total space, will become one. There never was any difference. It was just an artificial division. So similarly, the total Brahman and the Om are that one same consciousness functioning through the total, illumining the total universe, as the substratum, is called Brahman, and in the individual is called Om. Now, what is that unmanifest? You know, we talked about this egg that we call as Mahat Brahma. What is that? The egg or the unmanifest is called Mahat Brahma, and in the individual is called Vasanas. Vasanas are my unmanifest tendencies which make me act. An alcoholic has alcoholic vasana, a sportsman has sports vasana, a spiritual person has spiritual vasanas. So good or bad desires make me act, and it is called the causal body. It causes me to act. So vasanas are called the causal body. So Mahat Brahma is the total of all the vasanas, the composite of all, not only all the human vasanas. Animals have desires, plants have desires, birds have desires, fish have desires. So their unmanifest tendencies or desires, they all combined, is called Mahat Brahma, or called Brahmaji, or the creator. So just as my vasanas create my life, my world, the total creator, Brahmaji, creates the entire universe. Then the next, my vasanas influence my thoughts, my mind and intellect. It gives me ideas in my intellect, it creates desires in my mind. So my MNI, mind and intellect, the total mind and intellect, is called Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha is the technical word. And actually they say that we are connected with the total mind. My mind is connected with his mind and her mind and the plant's mind. And actually there is a line in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad which says it very beautifully. It says, you cannot break a leaf here without disturbing some distant star somewhere, because there is one cosmic mind. And so anytime you create any negative, either in your own mind, some negative ideas, or create negativity in somebody else by hurting them or harming them, you are actually damaging the entire cosmos, because the whole mind is getting disturbed. At the same time, when you are generating positive waves of love and sympathy and compassion, not only you are helping yourself and you are helping people around you, but you are helping. It sounds, you know, very strange, but it is very true. We are all connected. And that's why people sitting here can sometimes feel what is happening to their dear ones somewhere in India. You know, so my mother, something happened. Or mothers, especially with the child, if something happens to the child, he may be in the other state, other part of the US, but she comes to know something is not okay, call my son or call my daughter. Why? Because her mind is so intimately connected with that. And there is that's why people from one side of the room can know what is happening on the other side of the room. They can move coins. You know, there are people who have those kind of siddhis. Just with their mind, they can move that. So there is a total mind called Hiranyagarbha, and the individual mind and intellect. That is my mind and intellect. And then the body, there is my body. There is a sum total of all the bodies, not only human, again plant, animal, bird, fish, and even the char and achara, the moving and the unmoving bodies, total together are called Virat. And that's why when Sri Krishna showed Arjuna his cosmic form, they say he showed his Virat Roop, his Vishal Roop or Virat Roop. Virat means that in that one form of Krishna, Arjuna saw the entire universe, all the bodies, all the planets. He saw all the animals. He not only saw he saw the heavens and the hells and the goblins and the demons and the angels and even the Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, Indra. Everything he could see, all bodies, subtle and gross, he could see in that Virat Roop. So Virat is the total body, and my body here is called the individual body that I possess. And then what is Ishvara and Jiva? Ishvara is the total consciousness, Brahman, when it is identifying or functioning through the Mahat Brahma, through the total vasanas, is called Ishvara. And in the individual vasanas is called the Jiva, or the ego, the perceiver, feeler and thinker. So this is the total. So Ishvara is actually the creator, sustainer and destroyer of this entire universe. So that total consciousness functioning through Mahat Brahma becomes Ishvara. Ishvara is what in Hinduism we call Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. So the creator, the sustainer and the destroyer together are called Ishvara. So this is just the technical terminology of, so this is the individual and this is the total. And why do I need to remember? Because that is how creation started. Now how does this person, how does this universe get created? How did this, why is the reason for this variety? You know, there are in the same family, you will find twins. And they are so different from each other. I think we have some members here who have twins. Or if you have a brother and sister or two brothers and your own children, you will find even though they are from the same parents and they have been given the same upbringing, the same background, the same teaching, but they are so different from each other. In such a wide variety. Why is that? You know, they are physically different. They have the body may be different. Or even twins, even if the body is different, their emotions are so different, their ideas are different, their desires are different. Why is that? Because of the vasanas. Vasanas are the unmanifest tendencies which cause me to act. And the kind of mind and intellect and body I get and the kind of womb I get depends on my vasanas. So there is a total vasanas called Mahat Brahma, and that is the individual vasanas combined. So why did I choose particular parents? Why was I born in a particular country? Why did I have a particular kind of body? Why did I have a particular kind of emotions, thoughts? It is all based on my vasanas and my karmas. So if anything good or bad is happening to me, you know, there's no use to blame your parents or your environment or my husband or my wife or my child or my, but it is my own vasanas and my own karmas that are responsible not only for my birth, but for my subsequent activities. Whatever I am doing, good or bad, is because of my vasanas. I think yesterday somebody was asking, so are we then just a helpless product of our vasanas? So I was born with certain vasanas, I can't do anything. Am I just condemned, you know, to live a life of misery? They say no. Vedanta says that. Gurudev says what you have with your life is, you know, is destiny. Okay, I was born with a certain, but then what you do with that destiny is called purushartha or is called free will. So one is bhagya, one is my prarabdha, what is my destiny. And the second is what I do with what I have, whatever abilities I have, whatever qualities I have, how do I live my life to change my destinies? I may be born with certain negative tendencies, but how do I evolve to make them positive? How do I make myself a better individual? Whatever abilities, whatever talents I have, either I can use them for selfish purposes. Okay, you know, I have an ability to make money. Okay, I'm just going to make it for myself. Or if I have the ability to do that, maybe I can help somebody else. Like there is a gentleman here where we had some funds that were set aside, you know, for some specific purpose. And we gave it to him. And he has actually invested it so well. He has actually doubled and tripled those funds, you know. And he's so... What I'm saying is that, or somebody has an ability to sing. So she can sing for herself, or she can say, okay, I'm going to sing for the Lord. I'm going to sing beautiful bhajans. I'm going to compose, you know, bhajans in praise of the Lord. Somebody has an ability to work, has an ability to organize. So either he can say, okay, I'm going to organize my own firm and become very rich and become multimillionaire. There's nothing wrong with that. But do I just keep my God-given abilities to myself, or do I turn around and serve the world? So the more you do that, even we heard from Swamiji this week, The more you do unselfish activities, the more activities dedicated to God and dedicated without the ego that I and my, that I am doing it. Now I am a servant of the Lord is functioning through me. With that understanding, if you work in the world, then slowly you are, the word is vasana tanavam. The vasanas become thin. The negative vasanas become thinner and thinner. But the more you do selfish activities, we just heard in Yoga Vasishta, it's called vasana dadyam. Either you can make your vasana stronger and you get bound, or you reduce your vasanas, your selfish tendencies. And as you they become thinner and thinner, you come closer and closer to the self, the Lord's presence within. So the whole game, as we had heard from Swamiji this week, is vasanas. That is the basic thing. As you reduce your vasanas, as you reduce your selfishness, you come closer. Because I can work as myself, or I can say, okay, I'm working for this institution, or I'm working for the city of Bakersfield, or I'm working like the, you know, a senator or a president said, I'm working for the whole country. And then, you know, a great sage like Swami Chinmayananda or Jesus or Buddha, they say, I'm working for the entire humanity. They do not even limit their activities to one country or one province or one state. So the more you widen your circle of activity, the more divine your actions become. So that is what they're saying, that you can either limit yourself to me and my and I, or you can widen your circle. And not only that, but my vasanas and my life interacts with other people's lives, right? So now in my previous birth, see, I had something to give and take. I had something to take from somebody and something to give. And then in the next life, that person becomes my spouse. Because I had a lot of, you know, some accounts left unfulfilled. So that creates this present union where then I have this relationship, where then I have to undergo all the good and bad consequences of that particular relationship, also based on my karmas, on my vasanas. So it is our desires, our tendencies that decide how I am going to live my life. And these vasanas do not perish at the time of death. You might say, okay, I'm dying now, I start a new page. No, nothing happens. Everything becomes unmanifest. You become unmanifest as the part of the Mahat Brahma. And then when it is time for you to take birth again, then you again start your journey from wherever you were. Like Swami Chinmayananda explaining this very beautifully in his commentary, he says, in another place, he says, it's like there is a dharamshala. I might have covered this before, but there is like a hotel, you know, or a night rest house. And there are four people who come and spend the night. There is a businessman, there is a politician, there is a thief, and there is a saint. So there are four people. There is a businessman, there is a politician, there is a thief, and there is a saint. Now the four of them have rooms next to each other. Now having slept all night, now in the morning after they get up and get dressed and take shower and leave that hotel, have breakfast and go, is the thief suddenly going to become a saint overnight? Or the businessman become a robber or a politician? No. The businessman will go out and continue his business. Okay, suppose I've come to this town to sell my product, then he will continue his visits to all his customers to sell his product. The politician has come to campaign, you know, for his election, so he will continue that. The thief, you know, has been planning how I can rob, you know, the bank or the city or the, you know, town, so he will continue. And the saint will continue his activities of preaching and sharing. So having gone to sleep overnight, it doesn't happen that suddenly the saint, of course, with a lot of effort, even a thief can become a saint and all that, or a businessman can become a saint, or a saint can even become a businessman and, you know, become a crook. All those things can happen. But basically, people's tendencies don't change. So similarly, even though this is a one-night sleep, but death is just a long sleep. It's nothing but a sleep where I go and sleep, and it could be for few months, could be for few years, could be for 1,000 years. But basically, the human beings go into the unmanifest state called vasanas, and then from there starts the journey again. And so when this consciousness penetrates this Mahat Brahma, this total egg or this unmanifest bundle of vasanas, you may want to call it, then from there emerge all different varieties of people. As I said, there could be saints, there could be criminals, there could be business people, there could be workers, there could be men, women, children. So whatever your tendencies are, based on that, you continue the journey and you then continue to function. So here, as we said, this is the total consciousness which illumines. See, the mind, the body, mind and intellect and the vasanas are inert. They are matter. They are prakriti. They do not have life. They are actually a bundle of flesh. And not only flesh, but the subtle aspects of the mind, intellect and vasanas, which are actually by themselves inert. But it is the presence of the life, the consciousness, here we call Om, because of which we function. And in the 13th chapter, Sri Krishna very beautifully says, Purushav prakriti sthohi bhungte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. So he says, Purusha, Purusha is this Atman, the consciousness, prakriti sthohi, stationed in prakriti, as if stationed, even though the consciousness is not affected by vasanas, is also called as prakriti. Mahat Brahma is the total unmanifest, also called prakriti, also called maya. And maya is made of the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, which we may address later if we have time today, or we shall cover next week. But the whole 14th chapter is the play of the three gunas. So, Purusha prakriti sthohi bhungte prakriti jan guna. So, as if stationed in the prakriti, even though the consciousness is unaffected, but appears to be stationed in prakriti, bhungte prakriti jan guna. All the gunas from prakriti, all the gunas, the sattva, rajas and tamas, sattva being purity and knowledge, rajas being passion and activity, and tamas being darkness and ignorance. These gunas will be talking more in detail the entire 14th chapter. So I won't go so much into detail now. If we have time to do the next verse, we'll cover it. Bhungte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya. And as a result of guna sangha, attachment to the gunas, attachment to my vasanas of sattva, rajas and tamas, as I get attached to my body, mind and intellect, to the people around me, excessive desire and attachment, sad asad yoni janmasu. So the kind of womb, sat or asat, good or bad wombs that I enter is based on my attachment to good or bad qualities. That's why a good individual generally will be born in a good house where he'll have a good mother and father who will sustain and take care of the child to progress. Sometimes, of course, it may happen that even though the person is very good, he may be born in a very evil home where that may be required for that person to evolve. Another case could be that a person is an absolute criminal and crook, and he happens to be born in the home of very good people, and they say, oh, I did so much for them, and how did he turn out to be a drug addict and a thief and a criminal? Why? Because of his previous vasanas. But there was certain things he had to do, like maybe he was a criminal or a crook and he's born in a house of very good people. Why? Because he has something that person may have done to hurt him in the previous life. So he has come here to take revenge from those parents because they punished me in my previous life. So even though they are very good people, but in their previous life they may have done some karmas, because of which this child turns out to be a crook and he hurts the parents. Or correspondingly, there may be very evil people, but they may have a very saintly child who, despite all the circumstances, but he had some actions in his previous life for which he had to undergo this penance of being born in a very difficult home where he was abused and mistreated, and still he turns out to be a great saint. So that's what Sri Krishna tells us, that based on my karmas, based on my vasanas, I select wombs, that is sat or asat, good or bad. So this, you know, this karma is karma ki gati nyari. They say that no one can figure out. It is impossible for you and us with our limited intellect to try and even understand this beautiful law of karma that is so scientific, so perfect. There is not a single error in whatever the Lord does. Everything is perfect, everything. And it's not only a punishment. One way is to take it, oh, you know, I am being punished for my karmas. That is one way of taking the karmas. But a more beautiful way of understanding is that the world I occupy is a hospital. I am here because I am sick. You know, we are all sick. That's why we were born here. We have too many vasanas, too many negative tendencies. And so the world that has been created by the total Ishvara, the total, is the one that is best suited for me to evolve. I am here in this hospital to get well. And then there is a divine doctor, you know, you can call him Lord or Jesus or Father in heaven, who has placed me in this hospital because I'm sick and I need to get well. And so just as in a hospital, there might be four, you know, different people. One, you know, he just comes to the outpatient, he gets some antibiotics by mouth, he goes home. Another one, they say, you have a bad pneumonia, you can't be, you know, you have to be admitted for a week. Another one, you know, has an appendix ruptured, so he needs to be hospitalized, and he ends up with a major operation, 2 weeks in the hospital. Another one comes with a broken leg, hip, and multiple fractures, and he's put up in a cast for 3 months. Now, the guy sitting for 3 months with his leg up, he'll say, you know, this doctor is so mean. You know, now this other guy, he just got IV for 1 week, he went home. This doctor is punishing me. No, the doctor is not punishing you. Your illness required you to be with one leg up for 3 months. That was the only healing. You had to have surgery and cast and all that. And the other guy, his illness was minimal, so he just took some antibiotics by mouth and he went home and he got well. So similarly, each and every one of us has certain problems, vasanas, diseases, illnesses for which we took birth in this hospital. And the Divine Father, the Lord, the loving Krishna Shiva has made the circumstances so I can evolve, I can get well. So I should consider my life as an opportunity to improve, as an opportunity to evolve, as an opportunity to become better. So I should not, at least in this life, not go further down. You know, maybe I did some actions in my past life which were negative, but at least in this life, let me evolve upward, as we will hear in the later in the 14th chapter. He says, people who are sattvic go upward. People who are tamasic, who are wicked, go downward. And people who are rajasic stay at the same level. So if I am a very evil person, next life I'll be born as an animal or a cockroach or a mosquito. If I am a very divine person, then I'll become a saint or become an angel or become a heavenly, you know, body. And if I have plus or minus the same rajas, then I will become again a human being. So that is what one has to see, that what is this purpose of my life? Why am I here? And as we had talked even before, that the main purpose of life is to realize the truth, become one with God. So I should take this knowledge that has been given in the Bhagavad Gita, that has been given to us by Mahatmas like Swami Chinmayananda and Ishwarananda and all, take that knowledge and run with it, you know, evolve. In fact, in I was reading somewhere else very beautifully. I did that last Thursday, those of you who were here. That there are four kinds of horses. You must have heard, you know, there are four kinds of horses. We covered that last Thursday. I think a couple of you were here, so it's repeat, but it's worth repeating. He says there are four kinds of horses. One is called Adiyal Tattu, you know, that you keep on beating him. He never moves. He doesn't do anything. He just sits and eats. The second one is that you ride on him and you whip him. And as long as you are hitting him, he will keep moving. And the moment you stop, he will stop. You know, he'll fall down. He won't do anything. The third one is you hit him a little bit, whip him, and then he starts going. But after a while, he is gone for a while. Then he says, okay, there's nothing. He stops. Then you give him a little, you know, touch of the whip. Then he goes. But you have to, and the fourth one, you don't have to do anything. The rider has to just mount him. And just, he can understand the rider's mind. Okay, with his knee, if he just touches him a little bit, the horse knows where to go. He's so much in tune with the rider. So similarly, we have four kinds of students. The first kind is like that Adiyal Tattu. No matter how much the teacher tells him, no matter how much he suffers in this life, no matter how many problems, he never improves, never changes. Life, man, then he will keep saying, oh, why is this God punishing me? Why do I have so many problems? Why am I suffering? You are suffering because of your own actions. But these people will not improve. They will not learn. They will not get better. No matter how many gurus come to them and talk to them, how many Gitas they have read, they remain the same. Nothing happens in their life. The second kind are like the one that they need a guru teacher constantly. The teacher has to keep telling him, do this. As long as the teacher is telling, they will do it. The moment the teacher stops telling, a teacher goes, they go back to their old bad habits. Whatever I am, I'm going to continue to do. The third one is where the teacher has to come and give him some advice, and also the world has to give him some suffering, some misery, like that one whip. But then he realizes, okay. I have to, you know, change my life. I have to become better. So the teacher tells him, and the world gives him some sorrow, and then he says, no. My purpose of my life is to evolve, and this sorrow that has come is my alarm clock. That's what Eckhart Tolle calls it, the alarm clock to wake up. So I wake up, and I change my life. And the fourth one is like Nisargadatta Maharaj. Nisargadatta Maharaj is a great saint of the 20th century. It is very interesting. He was a bidi maker. Used to smoke bidis. He was uneducated, never went to school, never studied. I have probably talked about him before. Lived in Maharashtra, totally uneducated, had no knowledge, had not even gone to school. But somehow he had this spiritual urge. And so he meets a guru who tells him, Tattvamasi, you are that. You are that conscious. And then the guru leaves. Now, you and I, at least I have heard Tattvamasi 1,000 times and nothing has happened to me. But for Nisargadatta Maharaj, he only had to hear it one time from one guru. And the guru left. And guru didn't even know. I don't know how he told him. And he said, I am that. Guru said, yes, I am that. He totally believed it. He said, ho gaya kaam khatam. And from that day on, he just for 2.5 years, he said, wandered the every side saying, I am that. I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not this intellect, I am that consciousness. And his whole life changed. And he became a great saint. Not only he became a great saint, but he was so intelligent. Suddenly, from where this knowledge came, I actually have tried to read his book, I Am That, and believe me, it's not easy to read. The answers he used to give to the questions were so high that the highest philosopher would have difficulty understanding. So where did he get this knowledge? He was that fourth kind of student. All he needed was the teacher just to light the spark. And the flame of knowledge, of wisdom shone in him, and he became a great Mahatma. He became a great saint. And till today, his teachings are an inspiration to spiritual seekers. That book is a very powerful book. So the point of this talk is that I have to, either I can just limit myself to I, me, myself, my family, I, or I can widen my sphere. And secondly, either I can be a victim of my circumstances, my vasanas and my world, or I can say, wait a minute, I'm not here just to suffer, but I'm here to change the world. That's what, there's a very beautiful line. He says, lives of great men all remind us, we can make this world sublime, and departing leave behind us footprints in the sands of time. So this, I passed through this way and I made a change in the life. And that is what one can do. So that is how the whole world was created. And this is how I, myself, and what is my relationship. So Swamiji in his commentary talks about Jiva and Ishvara. What is Jiva and what is Ishvara? They are one and the same, but they are multiplied. The Jiva, like I am limited, you know, I am a miserable individual, I am suffering. And Ishvara is the Lord, the Creator, the Sustainer, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, all of these. So what is the difference between me and the Lord, between me and Ishvara? So they say it is like an individual and the president of the country. Now the president also has only one vote, right? When he goes into the ballot box, he casts one vote, just as if I go in the ballot box, I also have one vote. What is the difference between me and the president? I am limited and he is omnipotent. He has so much power. He can launch nuclear weapons. He can destroy the world. He can, you know, do so much. So Swamiji says in his commentary, Gurudev says, it is like the one who has identified himself with the majority becomes the president. Just as I only identify with me, my body, my mind, my family, my home, but he identifies with the totality, which means when he stood for election, say there was a Democrat and a Republican, and the one who got the majority of the votes, say one got 51% votes, other one got 49. So the 51% who got the majority of the votes, or like we have the Electoral College, one who got most votes, who identifies himself with the majority, but the majority of the people think, you know, I like, you know, this person, whether right or wrong, but I like Obama, or somebody says I like Bush or whatever. So the one who the majority of the people liked in that particular election wins and becomes the president. And then he becomes the president of the whole country. He's not only the president only of the Democrats or only of the Republicans, but he is, ideally, he should be working for the whole benefit of the whole country. If truly he has the vision, you know, like John F. Kennedy, you know, like what he said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. So these are visionary presidents who can see ahead, you know, what the country needs. People like Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and, you know, in India, Mahatma Gandhi and such. The great leaders who can see much into the future what is required. So similarly, Jiva is me identifying with my vasanas and suffering. Ishvara is the total Brahman, the total consciousness that is functioning through the Mahat Brahma, through the total vasanas. So functioning through the total vasanas, the Ishvara becomes the creator of the universe, sustainer, and then destroyer. Not only of, and similarly, I also, as an individual, as an ego, I create my own world, I sustain it, and then I destroy it. Like, I built a house, and then I maintain it, and then I say, you know, this house is too small. So I call the contractor, break this house, and build a bigger house in the same place. So I become the creator and sustainer and destroyer of my individual world, and Ishvara, identifying with the totality, the total Brahman, the total Brahma, not the Brahman, but the total Brahma, the total Mahat, the total Vasanas, creates this entire universe. So it was a long talk, but I think the subject was kind of subtle, and I thought we can cover in a little more detail. I hope I was able to do that. It's, creation is a very complicated subject. Actually, at the highest level, there is no creation, but we won't talk about that today because they say the world is an illusion, but that's not our subject today. Maybe some other time we can address that. But today, these two verses, verse number 3 and 4, talk about that Brahman, the Lord Krishna says, I enter the Mahat Brahma, place my seed, the light of consciousness, into the Vasanas, and from there emerges the Hiranyagarbha, the total mind and intellect, the total body. And Krishna, the total consciousness, identifying with the total Mahat Brahma, becomes the Ishvara, the creator, sustainer and destroyer. And I, the individual Jiva, identify with my individual world. So I'll end here. This is a very interesting subject. I hope there will be some questions, some comments. Yes. Well, if you truly believe it, what we believe is that Jesus, the 14 years when he was lost, he actually went to India. And that's what, because his idea of universal love and universal brotherhood are so much related to Vedanta and were so foreign to the thinking at that time, because he was born in an environment which was not at all, you know, was not at all spiritually enlightened, was a very, very basic environment. For him to come up with some ideas, he had to have gone to a foreign culture and studied. And in fact, the siddhis that he had, like raising the dead and creating food and all that, are described in our scriptures. So he actually went to Banaras. That's what it is said. He went to Banaras. He studied under a master, acquired those siddhis, those powers, and came back to teach. So that is what is believed. But, you know, I mean, if you tell some Christian that, they may not like to hear it. But that is what is said. Yes, the knowledge, yes. And that's why Moses could part the sea and all that. But I think Moses was before Christ. Yeah. But no, he passed the knowledge on. I don't think the abilities to that much to his the 12 disciples. They didn't have that many powers. But he did pass on the knowledge to them. Yes. 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 Yeah, yeah. No, but the idea of the virgin birth. Yeah, because again, what they say that in our scriptures, that around the third month, until then, the fetus is just inert. It is multiplying, but has no life. But in the third month, the life enters the womb. And from then on, then the child is alive. And that's why they say abortions, you know, I mean, as it is, abortion is wrong. But after the third month, they say, well, the fetus is viable. Then abortion is illegal and is also considered very immoral. But up to 3 months, the fetus is not yet alive, not yet. The life has not entered it. So that's when this light of consciousness enters the mother's womb. That's what they say, the third month. But that's a very good point. Thank you. Good question. No, he's in it. He's there. He's in this pointer. But it is in a, the one is the visible world. You know, one is this body I can see. But the mind and intellect is subtle. It's not like I don't know your thoughts and your emotions. You are aware of your own thoughts and emotions. I am not. Then there are the vasanas or the tendencies, which you may be aware of your own tendencies or you may not. You may say, why do I act like that? Why do I do it? I can't understand. Why do I behave? So those are called the unmanifest. And then the consciousness is the one that illumines everything, but is present in everything, but not available for our comprehension. You cannot think about it, you cannot see it, you cannot know it. But in your depth of meditation, when your mind has been completely purified, when your vasanas have been thinned to the bare minimum, and your thoughts become still in that silence of your deep meditation, or even when you are in deep prayer, when you lose yourself, then you experience that consciousness. Actually, the Lord is there in every cell of everything. Because they say, the cause is there in the effect. Like there is a mud pot. The mud pot has nothing but mud, mud, and mud. And the pot came out from mud, is sustained in mud, and then perishes into mud. The gold ornaments came from gold, are sustained in gold, and they merge back into gold when it is melted. You cannot remove the gold from the ornaments, like Swamiji told us yesterday, day before. So similarly, the Lord, you cannot remove him from this world. That's why they say God cannot leave you even if he wants to. He is with you at all times. All our problem is that our attention is in the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. It's outward. It's not inward, not looking within. You know, in the Upanishad it says, Paranchi khani vyatrinat swayambhu tasmat paran pasyati antaratmana. He says, Swayambhu, the Creator made our sense organs to look outside. And that's why the eyes look at the object, look at the ears hear, the nose smell, the tongue taste. So our sense organs are conditioned and made to look outside. So the poor individual just keeps looking out into the world. Na antaratmana, never looks within. But you can turn the attention inward and then you will discover the God's presence in every cell of your body. That's why Hanumanji, you know, that's why he when he opened his chest, they said his every heart was just saying Ram, Ram, Ram. That is symbolic. What it means is that every cell of my body is functioning because of the Lord's presence, but we have no time for him because we are so busy doing what we have in the world and we never turn inward. And that is what he says, na, pehle aap pehchano re sadho, pehle aap pehchano. Bina aap chinhe par brahm ko, kaun kahe main jano. He says, know yourself first, O sadhu, a wise person. You are all the time busy knowing the world, but know who you are, and that's how you will know God. No, the separate consciousness and Om is one and the same. It is a, what they call as a relationless relationship. It is supporting it, but not involved. It is like the rope and the snake. The rope is not involved in the snake. It is my ignorance because I don't see the rope because it's dark. So I don't see the rope as a rope. I project a snake upon it. And then I say, oh, this is a good snake or a bad snake. It's my enemy snake. I love the snake or so on. But in fact, the rope says, I have nothing to do with the snake. I didn't even create the snake. It is your own ignorance that you created the snake. So the Brahman, the consciousness, is the support of this whole universe on which you and I, in our ignorance, we project this snake. Okay, she belongs to my community, she belongs to my church, I love this person, I hate this person, and this is mine and this is yours. But actually, all of this is one consciousness. We are all nothing but that one consciousness. But the ignorance is the maya, is the vasanas, which causes me to see that. And that's why in a saint, he or she doesn't see. They see oneness in all. Mother Teresa, whether it was a leper or whether it was a king, she could see the oneness in all. You and I, we don't, because we say, oh, this person is dirty, this person is clean. So that is the difference between us and the saint. There is actually only one consciousness functioning through all. Everybody who is here and who is outside. All are, even that homeless person walking, everything is that. That's why even the chair has consciousness in it, has the Lord in it. That's why they say you should respect not only people, but even inanimate objects. Your shoes, your clothes, your chair, treat them with love because the Lord is in them. Everything needs to be worshipped. Everything is an item of worship. That's why in our scriptures, they worship snakes, they worship stones, they worship the river, the trees, the mountains. Why? Because the Lord is in everybody. That is a symbolism of that. Yes. So it is not knowing seeing the Lord, I see the... Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yes. Yeah, same thing. Because books have the knowledge. That's right. True. Because the books are the ones. That's why we don't step on books. We don't kick them. We don't put them on the... If you accidentally step on it, you know, you're supposed to ask for, you know, forgiveness. Yes. Any other questions? Comments?
What is that?
That's why you when you love somebody or when you see that divinity, that's when you develop the oneness, the feeling that this is me. Because it's the one consciousness. But for us, it may happen momentarily. But a saint always lives in that awareness. Yeah. It's hard to see, but yeah, it is possible. And that one has to constantly remind oneself, you know, that it's there in all. Yeah. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu. मा कश्चित् दुःख भाग् भवेत्। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ओम्। श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ओम्।